from KQED.
And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here for Michael Krasny. And for the rest of this hour, we're talking with comedian and performance artist Christina Wong. If you've never heard of her before, fasten your seatbelts. Her shtick includes a litany of skewering Asian stereotypes and misconceptions. Here's a short clip from one of her videos.
Yellow fever is a serious illness that affects white men across America today.
Hi.
I'm Larry.
Hi, Christina. Nice to meet you.
The disease causes men to fetishize Asian women.
Oriental women are just so sweet and so gentle. My last six girlfriends were Asian.
Symptoms include considering yourself an expert in Asian culture.
But Chinese sucks.
Asian sisters, we can't beat them, but we can get payback.
I'm Asian American. And I want reparations for yellow fever.
And Christina Wong joins us now on Forum. Did you ever get those reparations other than having white guys come over and clean your house?
And feed me. You know, I take back power in how I can in small doses.
I want to get to you and your background. But before we do that, I just want to see what are your thoughts about this crazy NAACP story?
Man, if I drop any lines at my show this week, it's all Rachel Dolezal's fault because I have been obsessed with this story.
Yeah.
She's
so much of your...
I want to talk about durational performance art.
Yeah.
Man, I'm just like wondering, did she secretly have like crates of spray tan juice like sent to Spokane? And like, how do you pull that off for
so
long?
And the whole thing. But I mean, it's sad in some ways.
So sad. Yeah.
But this whole question of racial identity, I mean, it is, and what does it take to be African American or to be Asian American?
Or some a marginalized person.
Or a marginalized person. Yeah.
Yeah, is it as easy as plain Halloween every single day? But I think, you know, one thing that I think makes this so strange is her commitment in terms of like not just like an Iggy Azalea, like I'm going to adapt mannerisms and hip hop, but I'm going to really like be super well versed in social justice politics, and I'm going to lead the NAACP. Like that's a whole other level of commitment.
Yeah, and you know, I was talking to Gene Demby from Code Switch, I was thinking about, you know, gay people can sort of hide. You know, they can go, depending on where they are, decide to come out or not come out. Mm-hmm. And you do it based, I think, on, you know, you sort of assess the risk of being out, you know, in a particular place. You know, you never think of Asian Americans or African Americans of having that option. And it's just so odd that it would go the other way.
My greatest hope is that Cameron Crowe will direct her biopic and then I'll... In the spirit of Emma Stone playing mixed race people, I'll get to play Rachel Dolezal.
There you go. Well, let's talk about you. So you grew up in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Grew up in the Sunset.
I grew up in the Sunset,
and
where all great performance artists come from.
That's right. Tell me about your family a little bit.
Well, I'm still in the will, so I have very open minded folks. I very much grew up not understanding that what I do now for a living exists or was even an option. It was pretty much you can be three things: a doctor, or a physician. And then after that, you just like sort of fall off a cliff. And I would have huge anxiety attacks, like even in middle school, like what am I going to do for the rest of my life? Like everyone's just sort of playing.
Your parents push you to sort of
play
the violin and
I didn't do any of that. Like I didn't become bilingual. I quit piano. I didn't get into Lowell, which is, if you're Chinese American, you understand San Francisco, not getting into Lowell is devastating. It's the most devastating thing imaginable.
Yeah, but we laugh about it. You laugh about it, and your routines are hilarious. But how did your parents feel about you choosing the path that you've chosen?
I have to applaud them. They've been so supportive over the years. In the sense that they've I think it really comes down to they do love me, and while they are just like, oh my God, do you have to show your crotch? Do you have to do things like that? Do you have to go on reality TV doing these things? But I do think at the end of the day, they do love and care about me. And
do they come to your shows?
They do. They'll be there. You can come meet them Wednesday or Sunday.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Do you call them out?
They'll be the ones with they joke that they'll be the ones wearing paper bags over their heads. but they have yet to actually do that.
Now I alluded to, or I know I've seen you refer to yourself as a tiger mom's worst nightmare.
Uh-huh.
What does that mean to you?
Well, I just don't think
Tiger Mom's being
it was yeah it was just very strict mom and you know to be fair I'm not even very crazy about that idea of Tiger Mom. I think it just sort of otherizes yeah others another stereotype, but it's catchy. People know what it is. It's like there are so few reference points for the rest of the world to understand Asian America, and unfortunately, that's one of them. But I don't think that Asian women are taught or thought of as very visible. So even when I am very vocal in my work, it's like, oh, that's so cute of her. Oh, it's so cute that she's so angry. Like, it's not a very it's hard to take me seriously. So a lot of my work plays with this idea of how seemingly harmless I am, or seemingly non-threatening I am, which is what made the reality show on Mixed TV so much fun.
Yeah, and that notion that so many men of all races, I think, except I don't know if Asian Americans.
Yeah, this
are
was
included.
In a statistic that had came up from an app, or at least a data user
dating site. Or
yeah,
something.
Was that men of all races preferred Asian women to everybody else?
Yeah.
And so I went and did a TV. I was asked to comment on it, and basically I'm spitting and thrusting in the air and going, "Yeah, suck it, white ladies," because I've been living under the shadow of your beauty standards my entire life, and now I'm going to get it. I'm going to get your brother. I'm going to get your uncle. You know, like, I didn't say all that, but that's the verve. It was sort of like this weird sweet revenge that I could get feeling so gawky and ugly as a teenager.
So let's hear another clip from another one of your shows. And this may be that same routine that you were describing, part of your campaign for reparations for yellow fever. So you go on dates with some of these guys.
Real dates, real men.
Real men. And
real white men who prefer dating Asian women.
And here's one of them. This is an Australian guy.
Okay.
Asian women complain to me that they are preyed on by white guys with yellow fever, but I say I haven't paid for a meal in 3 years.
So, here we are.
Here we are.
Chinese restaurant. Ever since I saw Karate Kid when I was 7, I've actually been in love with Asian culture.
Wait, where are you from?
Australia.
Oh, I love Mr. Bean. And what's the other show? Downtown Abbey. Downton Abbey.
Uh-huh. I said I was Australian, and then she was naming some British shows. She's like, it wasn't really that funny.
British, Australian, same difference. They all look the same to me.
Christina Wong, just giving them a little taste of their own medicine.
Yeah, just a little. I mean, it'll never quite reverse how ugly like colonialism has been, or how much it hurts to feel like my whole life I've had to fight like both trying to hold on to Chinese culture or whatever that means, and but this pressure to assimilate.
Yeah. Well, and it seems to be there's a high premium in Asian American, maybe Asian culture, Chinese culture, also to fit in. You know, not to stick up. I think there's an expression, I'm not sure where it comes from, but the nail that sticks up gets hammered down.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that a value in your family?
Yeah, I think that's why what I do for a living now is so, it's almost statistically impossible that I am a performance artist for a living, that I do stand up dressed like giant fabric genitalia. Like, this is not something that my mother would ever be okay with, but she's, you know, reluctantly supportive.
Embracing.
Now. Yeah. And I think, but I think that we are in such a necessary moment where I feel like I have to do this work. I don't, I just don't like blending it. I don't like the idea that I'm just sort of anonymously read as passive and that I don't have an opinion about things.
Talking with Christina Wong, a comedian, and her new show is opening up this week, a one-woman show called The Wong Street Journal.
Yep.
Yes, opening Wednesday,
opening Wednesday
in San Francisco.
Opening Wednesday here at Z Below and produced by Circuit Network. And so basically, I toured a show called Wong Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest for several years, and that had to do with the high rates of depression and suicide among Asian American women, and sort of what we were talking about, like Asian women being semi-invisible or being taught to just like just fly under the radar. I feel like that is why that statistic is so prevalent, because when we do call for help, no one believes us, or it's just assumed that, oh, they're fine. They're not making a lot of noise about being upset. So I toured that show for 8 years. That's way too long to tour a show about depression and suicide, even a funny show, which it is. And I just had a moment where it's like, I don't want to, if I'm going to live with a live show this long, it has to be about something totally different. And I went to Northern Uganda, post-conflict Northern Uganda.
Where you posed as a hip-hop artist.
Where Yeah, I didn't. I don't know if this is my Iggy Azalea moment, but while I was out there, I worked with a microloan organization and I met a group of rappers and made an album with them that plays on the radio up there. And it sounds sort of like romantic and fun, like, oh, wow. But it was, for me, a huge interrogation of privilege and where I'm situated as an Asian American who is not white, who is not black, that I share, you know, I have oppressions as a person of color. I occasionally benefit from white privilege, but where do I fit in these bigger global situations? How am I read? And there I'm read as a white woman, which was whoa to me. And I did feel like I could sort of weirdly identify with why white people get so defensive when they're called out on their privilege. Oh my God, no, I have black friends. Oh, because I was not, like, in my mind, I'm just here in America. In the social justice circles I run in, I'm used to talking about my identity from a marginalized perspective and the shared oppressions that people of color share. Now, this is not to say that Asian Americans and African Americans or black people have the same struggles. That's absolutely not true. There's a huge spectrum of difference in there. But I had to really confront that difference, especially in northern Uganda.
Well, and there are also there are a lot of stereotypes, not just about Asian Americans, but within the Asian American community toward blacks and Latinos and everyone, right?
Yeah. I mean, and a lot of this show does what a lot of my essays and a lot of these shorter works that people know me for don't do, which is going into a lot of being very vulnerable. Like, I carried a lot of stereotypes about the African continent. Like, most of the information I had about Africa was Save the Children commercials in the 80s and, like, just stories about warlords and things like that. And any kind of semblance of people functioning or self-determining their own lives, that gets obliterated because the narrative is always that people in Africa need us to save them. They need to be saved and saved and saved. When really, Americans, we got to look at what we have going on here and save ourselves and really just understand ways to support the self-determination of marginalized people rather than just be this big white hand that comes down and lifts everybody out.
What are the demographics of your audience like?
Oh, they're everything. Well, when I perform at colleges, it's a lot of it's Asian American student groups. It's kids on their iPhones tweeting while I'm performing.
is it racially diverse?
I would say with my last show, I was very happy that I toured in places like Oklahoma and Alaska and places where I had to cut, like, some of my jokes, which are very specific to having grown up in California and being around a lot of Asian Americans and being around a lot of Asian American artists. A lot of the jokes just don't make any sense to some parts. We'll find out this weekend. It'll be a little of everything.
If you want to join the conversation this morning and talk to my guest, Christina Wong, the number is 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also send your comments and questions to forum@kqed.org. Here's an email from Cole who writes, "We went to middle school together."
Oh, like Cole Thomas and Redis. He was my boyfriend for like half a week.
What?
My fake boyfriend.
Your fake boyfriend. Okay, yeah. Let's give Cole a moment here. Back in those days, we both had quite a bullseye on our backs in terms of being teased and bullied in the ninth grade. From that day, you've always impressed me with your undying ability to always and unapologetically be yourself. Today's youth and emerging artists need that example more than ever. Thank you for your providing this example. I'm so proud to watch your career and artistry grow.
Yes,
grow so
I will marry you, Cole. Yes, I will.
Cole, call in if you want to propose. what was it like, though? You said you didn't go to Lowell.
I didn't go to Lowell.
Did you grow up in a high school that was racially diverse?
I went to Mercy High School, which was an all-girls
Catholic
school. Yeah, and I didn't really... It's so interesting because I didn't really know a lot of Filipinos. They were all hiding in Catholic school. And I guess in general, I feel like in the education system, we're not taught to think critically about race and to think critically about privilege. We're just sort of taught to just embrace this broad thing called diversity and just get along. And so this is where things happen, where people make false equivalencies. Well, would you say that if, how can you say I have an Asian fetish? You have a white fetish. And the thing is, we have to consider that people's histories are completely different. And this doesn't mean that that all white people are bad or all Asian people are innocent. That's not what this means. But having more critical discussions about history and what we are assimilating towards.
What about within the Asian American community? I mean, because as you, I saw one of the clips from your show where you're taking orders from the audience about, well, let's yell out an Asian background, and it was Thai, Japanese.
Yeah, and how impossible it is to basically, and that's from Cuckoo's Nest, I think you're referencing, and I'm trying to please my audience by doing this comprehensive show that tells the story of all Asian Americans, but there are so
many. And you
many,
cut them off after four, you know,
yeah,
jokingly.
Yeah, they're going, okay, great, we got them all.
But how does that conversation about race within the Asian American community, how does that
complicated. I mean, we're not necessarily known for being radical activists in support of, in solidarity with, like, that is a specific moment of education that has to, and revelation that has to happen. And I know for me, my folks were just like, okay, we're going to give you this name that a lot of other Asian women share. We're going to name you Christina Wong, and we just do what you can. These are the rules. Fly within the rules. And I did that for most of my life. I just sort of flied within the rules of, this is how you pass. This is how you get along with so-and-so. This is how you don't rock the boat.
What were some of the rules?
Just like, well, you definitely don't confront people about privilege. You get these grades. You rack up all these things on your college application. You're nice to these people. You stay away from these people because they're considered bad. And I mean, they're just sort of rules about assimilating. Black and brown people. Right. I mean, this is a hard thing for me to say out loud, but I am glad that I don't believe that anymore, and that things have actually kind of flipped in my head, where I am interested more in working in poor people, basically, and working in conjunction with those who are most marginalized.
What about
and most misunderstood?
Were you sort of encouraged to marry or to partner?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Within
oh, yeah,
Chinese
like
American
culture? Even I'm third generation, and I remember like my folks specifically wanted me to have a Chinese husband who was a doctor, and we'd have bilingual kids, and we'd breed, and those kids would get married to other Chinese doctors, and there'd be more, just like forever, right? This is how we would do it. And, you know, now I'm like, you know, I'm going to lose my fertility in a few years, and now it's just like, anyone, anybody, Christina, anybody. Bring us grandchildren, please.
Doesn't matter what race they are. Here's another email from Mike, who writes, I have a stereotype about Asian women that they are bossy. My way or the highway comes to mind. Okay, that's his comment.
What do you want? He wants me to refute it or go,
I don't know.
I'm sorry you got that.
You got that all wrong. I'll do whatever you want. Yeah. What are some of the stereotypes within Asian cultures about other Asian cultures?
Let's spend some airtime to further some regional stereotypes. Filipinos can dance. Let me think. What are the other ones? That Thai people give great massages. That Chinese people don't give a crap about anybody. They're not political. That they. I mean, we could go on.
No shortage.
All day. I'm afraid that someone's tuning in right now is going, oh, who is this woman?
So, like, is there a pecking order of Asian American of Asian cultures? Do you think?
I believe that there is assumed to be a pecking order. I would like to work towards a world where there is not a pecking order.
But I mean, you know, just in terms of stereotypes and prejudice within the communities.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I think it has a lot to do with colorism that sort of as it plays out in other groups, that sort of the darker the Asian group, the less respect, or the more likely that they are to be the nannies of the lighter. Lighter skin Asian groups.
Yeah. Well, let's play another clip from one of your shows. This is a preview of your new show called Wong Street Journal, and it's you talking about white privilege.
White privilege is a very polarizing term. It really freaks white people out. It makes them run as fast as they can towards some of their best friends in the world, many of them who just happen to be black people. I know, because when you can't find them, you come looking for me next. To be clear, white privilege is not about blaming white people for something they did not do. It is not about me trying to win the Oppression Olympics gold medal for the 100-meter stop and frisk. White privilege does not mean that you are a bad person just because you're white. Except for you, sir. You look like a horrible person.
And again, that is Christina Wong from her show, which will be premiered in San Francisco on Wednesday, right, Christina?
Yes, yep. Wednesday through Sunday.
It's called Wong Street Journal, and it runs Wednesday through the 21st of June at Z-Below in San Francisco, right here in the Mission District. Mm-hmm. Well, how have you fine-tuned the show?
I work out shows in front of audiences, so for better or for worse. And it's, I mean, just to me, the live theater medium is a dying form, but I hope it's something we go back to, because all the nuances that we don't get in blogs and quick jokes, to me, is what I really execute live in front of an audience. And it's easiest to be vulnerable in front of an audience, or else I will get just like cut and paste a headline. You know, some of the stuff I'm saying here, I'm like, oh man, I wish we had more time to like go into detail. So, this show, I came back from Uganda in 2013, and I just started to talk through the archives, my uncomfortability, the thoughts going on in my head. And it was sometimes uncomfortable for me or for audiences, and recognizing that uncomfortableness is a lot of what I ended up doing the show about. It was about it'd be really easy for, and a lot of people choose to not go visit a place like any country in Africa because of what they've heard. Also, it's a very expensive trip. But, you know, for me, I was like, well, I feel like if I'm, you know, working with so many communities of color here, but yet hold all these stereotypes, I should just do this and work through this.
What was the reaction in Uganda to an Asian, Chinese American woman?
Oh, man. It was... Well, one was that I was a Mzungu, which is a Swahili word, which means foreigner or white woman. And I was just frequently referred to as like, when they see your white skin, I'm like, this is so weird. I did have and this is stories in the show, I had a moment where a man from Uganda asked me to translate some words for a Chinese tattoo for him. Mm. And I was like, listen, I'm not really the best person to do this. And I'm just thinking, how did this horrible 1990s fad from America make it down to like post-conflict northern Uganda? And and he really insisted, like, I don't want to use the internet. I want you. So I was like this oracle of Chinese people, which is like all my linguistic failures.
A lot of pressure.
Can get embedded in the skin of Ugandan people. It was so bizarre that, like, in ways I understood why evangelical churches that come and missionize like all the folks that have passed on this homophobic agenda have so much power, because it's a very young population that has been very traumatized by war and just like everything just seems like the real deal that comes down there. And so I was like this real deal, and I translated the great for him in these very
into
like
Chinese
primary characters,
yeah.
Dai Ho, like big and good. And now this man might be running around with my bad Chinese translation on his skin.
And no one will know, probably.
Yeah.
Here's an email from Howard, who writes, Christina, thank you for your efforts to shed light on mental health issues of Asian Americans. You said that show ran for Wong?
Since 2006.
Yeah. What was the reaction, both from audiences, but also from the larger community?
That show had a very hard life. It wasn't ready when it first premiered. I worked it out continually in front of audiences, but I was floored by how many people came out, and just in the process of making it, how many women who I knew in professional context, not even Asian women, but white women and others, like saying, I'm so glad you're doing this show. And they would just, I was sort of like the safe space where they could tell me about their suicide attempts or like really personal information that I was like, I wish I had these kind of conversations with women when I was younger, because I would have felt less alone. And it really pointed to a certain point of isolation around the topic of depression, that how shameful it is to talk about it. And
does it come back, do you think, does it trace back to the pressure that a lot of kids feel growing up?
For me, it's around a culture of silence. And this is what the show ultimately is like, I'm not the be all end all voice of this in the show, as I am this overachiever named Christina Wong that's going to fix this problem and solve it in, you know, 80 minutes. And I start to fall apart during the show. I feel like for me, if I were to project personally, it has to do with like wanting to make sure everything is perfect, insisting that any personal connection to the topic is all fiction, and being super obsessed with this fictitious impression of my life that I'm presenting for.
Here's some more email. Matt writes that white men are attracted to Asian women out of fetishization based dressed in stereotype is itself a stereotype, and a tired one at that. Any comment on that?
You can take me to dinner. We can talk about it.
You can pay for it. And then Marcus, here's a tweet from Marcus. She's hilarious. Thanks for bringing her on.
Oh, thanks. Yes, I will marry you, Marcus.
And then someone else called in to ask, where did you go to high school? You said
Mercy High School.
Yeah, Mercy High School. Here's another tweet, also from Marcus. With huge numbers of Chinese Americans in San Francisco, does that create an atmosphere of privilege like white communities have?
I don't think it's the same as white privilege. I do think that personally speaking, having grown up, you know, I live in the LA now and I grew up in San Francisco, it's definitely a different universe when you aren't the only Chinese person in the room. But I definitely feel like the standards set about what is beautiful and what is valuable have been historically set by white people. And that is something that Chinese people, at least that I've been around, have been very good at running after.
Here's another one, another comment. Christina's funny. She's slightly off on the yellow fever issue. Many Asian women in the
USA. All these defensive white men writing. I'm just going to throw it out. Defensive, yo. Just defensive.
Yeah, although we don't know if it's a male writing, just to be fair. Sure. Many Asian women in the USA are from families with strong values toward family and success. Too many white women, even those who make it to college, end up as ditzy sociology majors that spend all their time at sorority events rather than expanding their minds and culture. Successful males of all races are attracted to successful, attractive females. End of story. More complicated than that.
It's so complicated, huh? All of you can just take me out to dinner. We'll talk about it. Clean my house and we'll talk about it.
How do you think is it different in the gay community? Because you talk, I'm guessing you might have a gay friend or two. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a whole thing in the gay community for Asian men. It's called rice queens, right? Pardon the expression, but that is the expression. How is it different in terms of the stereotypes and the fetishes?
Well, it's still sort of the other, the exotic, the ooh is the Asian and I don't know. It is different. I think that's what's hard about trying to make Asian issues like more apparent in the mainstream is that there's so few markers that the mainstream America I think have to go on is that we have to constantly like use examples from other communities, but they're not always equal analogies, you know. I feel like a lot of my gay Asian friends definitely enjoy my commentary on it, and they have to deal with the same power politics all the time of how to negotiate situations where they feel like they're a thing or a
coming up at the end of the hour, but why should someone go to your show? What's the takeaway?
For those of you who are like, this is more complicated, this is absolutely more complicated. And unfortunately, in blogs or reality TV shows or snippet things, we don't get to do that. But I have 85 minutes where a lot of the people, like I get a lot of hate mail, and people are like, talk more about it. And that is what the Wong Street Journal is.
All right. Christina Wong, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. Good luck
with your new show. It's called Wong Street Journal. It runs June 17th through the 21st at Zibelo in San Francisco. Yeah. Check it out. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Susan Britton, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer today is Howard Gelman. Our engagement editor is Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. For Michael Krasny, I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.